This week's podcast is sponsored by Direction. Welcome to the Investing with IBD podcast, everybody. It's Justin Nielsen, your host. And Arusha won't be joining us this week. He was tied up. So it's just going to be me. And our special guest this week is Dan Fitzpatrick. He's the founder of Stock Market Mentor and a returning guest to the show. He's also been on IBD Live. We've got a lot of great stuff to talk about, Dan. So thanks a lot for being here today.
Hey, thanks for having me. This is always fun.
Yeah, it's always great having you. One of our favorites. So let's get right into it. Okay, so it's April 12th, Wednesday here, 2023. And we just had a CPI report. And then we also had the Fed minutes come out. And so right now, it seems like there's this push-pull of, you know, inflation and recession. You know, what do we focus on? So we'll certainly have to tackle that to a little degree. And also, one of the things that we're going to be talking about with Dan today is the whole concept of how do you do your approach? Are you doing the top-down approach or are you doing a bottom-up approach? And he'll explain what that means, what he does, and talk a little bit about the screening that he does and how he finds the best setups. And then, of course, as always, we'll end with a few stocks. So, Dan, let me turn it over to you. And we've got the S&P 500 up right now. What's your take right now on where we're at with the market and what the market's focused on?
Yeah, well, I think as far as focus, I think it's a little bit scattered.
Yeah, but doesn't know where to focus.
Well, you know, that's the whole thing. And it's like ADD or more like ADHD, everything's all over the place. And, you know, you were mentioning about, you know, inflation versus economic growth, recession and all that jazz. That's still, it's almost like why even talk about it? Because everybody knows about it. The most important thing that is like the single biggest data point in the future is, when is the Fed going to come out and say, well, guess what? You know, we're not doing anything with rates now. Mm-hmm. And then the anticipation is the next move will be lower. But nobody really knows when that's going to happen. And it's, I think you kind of, this is the underlying premise for me, because it works for me in the long run. I think that the Fed is simply not good at its job. I think it really just doesn't know. It's just not good at its job. And so because of that, we know what their issues are. We just don't know how they're going to handle it. It's like, are they going to get it right? Are they going to get it wrong? Are they going to push too far until mm-hmm. something really big breaks? Because that's what they always do. And we don't know. Because of that, this is why you're seeing the market do what it's doing. If you look at, say, the S&P, we've been trying to get through this 4,200 level for quite a while. And once we do, you know, I think that's going to be I think that'll be a key point. But I can't really say it's going to take this or it's going to take that in order to push the S&P higher. You know, you really can't. You can try to sound smart and say, well, once they make their first cut, that's when the market's going to scream. But we really don't know, because mm-hmm. the market anticipates. Right. And right now, with, you know, with a little bit of a clown car running the show, you just can't really tell. So it just really gets back to something that sounds basic and almost trite. You got to just look at the charts mm-hmm. and let somebody else figure it out. Mm-hmm. But if you know, we have these moving averages on there, Justin, if you look at where the S&P is, it's above all these key moving averages. And that's a good thing. That shows me where support is, and you're just highlighting it right there. And so do I think the bottom is established? Do I think the bottom is put in? Yeah, I do. Mm-hmm. And it's simply, it's not because of any eternal wisdom on interest rates or anything else. It's just that there's so many moving averages. There's so much support under there that's where the buying is. And also one thing for people to keep in mind is that money has to go somewhere. Now, a lot of it's going into CDs and money markets because of what's going on with the regional banks, but money has to go somewhere. And I just don't think as we get further along the X-axis, which nobody pays attention to, that's the time axis. The more stocks march sideways, the better the base is, the bigger and solid the foundation is for the to support the next move higher. So short term, I'm scratching my head, but long term, I really think we're having a good setup. And if you look, like look at the NASDAQ composite now, keep an eye on what these moving averages are.
And just real quick, I want to make sure that people know what moving averages we're looking at, because this isn't our typical ones. We're we're using some longer term moving averages in this case, not short term ones. So we've got the 50, the red, and the 200, the black, which is our normal. But you had me add the 100 and the 150 day as well. So that's the pink and the green. So go ahead.
Okay. And by the way, here's why I do that. Because this is a pretty noisy chart with all this stuff, but sometimes it actually clarifies. Because I'm not asking you to do this. I don't even know if you can do this. But if you just erased the price and only looked at the moving averages, this is exactly what you'd see. You'd see a takeoff. You'd see kind of a touch and go, so to speak, on this. And so of all the indexes, you know, the major indexes, I think the NASDAQ composite still looks the best. That's kind of been in the news with the large cap and mega cap stocks working so well, but you can just really see it in the index that it's working. And if you want to look at, we can kind of dig further down. And if you want to look at the mid caps, again, guys, just keep an eye on what the major averages are doing. Like that's a mess. You know, it looks like somebody's playing pickup sticks and hasn't started yet. You know, it's just all over the place. And then the same thing with the small caps.
Well, this is MDY, which is the S&P 400. ETF, and this is IWM, which is the iShares Russell 2000 that we're looking at here.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So look, compare this, look at where the price is to the moving averages. Like that's a ceiling right above that level. And then you go, you know, if you went back to the NASDAQ, it's the floor. And until these stocks start to play kind of catch up and get up through that ceiling of moving averages, you don't really want to be there. And what I'm talking about, I'm actually talking in this segment here, I'm really kind of talking about the top-down approach, which is something that we should talk about, you know, in the next segment as far as why I think the better approach is the bottoms-up approach. But when you're looking at the broader market, you know, this is what you got to look at, not what Microsoft is doing. And so,
although right now, I guess, you know, we should discuss that there has been some talk about the index strength lately masking a little bit of what's going on underneath. And part of that has been you've got Meta, that was Meta Platforms that was doing very well, Apple, Google, those were all holding up very well. But there were some individual stocks that were kind of getting raked over the coals for a little bit here. And again, it kind of has to do with that noisiness where money was kind of, you know, going from one place to another. So, you know, are these mega cap companies becoming too large of a weight? And are they muddying the waters even more on what's really happening with the market?
That's actually what I think. Is there's nothing wrong with them. You know, if you look at, you can look at Apple, you can look at Meta, Microsoft, Nvidia. These are four stocks that I've had in our active trade ideas list, which is a list that I, you know, I always try to get people in the stocks that are working. And so I keep a list of things, and it's a fairly actively traded thing. And so we got into these stocks from much lower, and I suggested either liquidating or at least cutting your position down on all of them, simply because that's what I could see institutions doing. I mean, you look at how far this thing has run. Look at where NVIDIA has gone from 150, you know, up to 275 or so in just a very few months. That's a position that a portfolio manager now is going to have an overweighting there. And so he's going to be reducing that position. And where is that money going to go? You know, it's not going to go into Apple. It's looking for something else for the next big winner. And that's why I think even though, and I don't really know, I haven't looked at them lately, whether the Apples and the NVIDIAs, et cetera, are overpriced if they have a super high valuation. You know, I haven't looked at that in a while. I just think that they're stagnant at this point. And to me, again, I mentioned the x-axis. If a stock's just going to be drifting sideways for a while, then maybe ultimately that's a really good thing for future prices. But for like right now, for next week, for 2 weeks, you know, I don't really want the sideways action. And so you got to be looking for the next ones.
So, you know, for stocks, you know, just to be clear, you don't want to be like necessarily sitting in them while they're doing that sideways action. But what you were saying for the indexes, to kind of get back to that, you're actually kind of fine with sideways action right now. As you said, kind of almost building that platform, building that foundation from which we can launch off of. How long do we need to go on the x-axis in that regard to build a strong enough foundation, I guess?
Look, in my view, I think if we can move sideways literally through summertime into what will then habitually, you know, typically be the strongest part of the year, that's when I think that the market could really get going. But I have to say, in order to just be, you know, intellectually consistent, you really just have to look and see what the market is doing as opposed to what you think it should do. However, I've been doing this a long time, and this is, we're at this, in this kind of limbo here, because we didn't get a real V bottom like we did in 2020 with the pandemic, or some of the, or the last financial, you know, the last banking crisis. We didn't get any V bottom, and the V's are the ones where they reflect just absolute stock puking right at the end. And then you get a spring higher that almost doesn't need a base, just because all the money got flushed out and now it's all coming in. Unfortunately, we don't have that situation now.
Yeah.
What we have instead is this slow grinding thing that I think is going to take, I think it should probably take us through the summer. At least I hope so, because the longer we drift sideways, the more sustainable the ultimate rally is going to be. And this is standard Wyckoff stuff, by the way. Stocks or markets go into four cycles: accumulation, markup, distribution, and markdown. Accumulation, et cetera, et cetera. And so we're still in the accumulation phase.
So I'm showing the weekly chart here, and certainly, you know, as you mentioned, that COVID V shape right there. Even you know, there was the period in 2018 where there was some kind of V shaped action with the Fed kind of saying, "Hey, we're going to take the punch bowl away," and then saying, "Oh, just kidding, we're not." And some, you know, some of that volatility crisis stuff that we had at the beginning of 2018. So certainly, I think people got used to that V shape. Maybe we're hopeful that that was going to happen, but you know, that 40 week moving average line on the weekly chart here certainly acted as a ceiling for a lot of those rallies that we had along the way. But now it does seem like we're at least putting some price action above that 40 week line. Do you need it to stay above there in order for you to get a little bit more confident that this one's for real?
Yeah, I would. Although I will say, on this. If we got a pullback, say to 11,000 on the NASDAQ, I don't think that would be a bad thing. I think it could certainly sustain that. But here's the thing. The further it falls within this range, the harder it's going to be to get back above that, because, you know, it's important to remember when a stock is falling because it's being sold, somebody's buying that stock. And so the further down it goes, the more pain it leaves in its wake. But if you want to go back to the weekly chart, I was just thinking about something. Even though it's been since the mid-90s that I first started trading, I do remember this aspect of learning. You see, like the first big sell-off in your life, and you go like, "Oh my God, I don't know what's happening there." And then you see that, then you say, "Well, you know, maybe that's a glitch, maybe that's a fluke," and then it happens again, and you miss that one too because you're freaked out, and then you say, "Okay." When it happens again the third time, that's when I'm going to get it. But it never happens for the third time. I mean, it's always like two, and then everybody's waiting for it. And because everybody's looking for the same thing, it doesn't happen. And that's what I think. It's just the way I kind of look at things is, how does the market learn? And the market actually learns very slowly. It factors things in very quickly. But in the aggregate, the market learns very slowly. But once it does learn, and this is my argument now with the way why stocks are trading so sporadically and haphazardly, now the market's changing. That's why, you know, black boxes don't work. You know, black boxes are awesome for certain market conditions. And then when the black box stops working, it's more like the red box, and that's where all the money gets dumped into. So the market's changing, and we're definitely seeing that right now. We've seen it over the last year or so, 2 years really.
So when you say the market's changing, what do you mean exactly there?
Well, I mean that there are no real sustainable themes. You hear this saying, you know, oh, it's a stock picker's market. Well, what that really connotes when you think about it is, let's look at it in the opposite way. When is it not a stock picker's market? Well, right. It's not a stock picker's market when everything just goes up. Yeah. I mean, that's the whole point. Like, you don't have to pick stocks. You know, the market's doing well.
It doesn't matter what you pick. It's all good.
Exactly. But here's the point. If it's not a stock picker's market and everything's going up, I would argue that it's even more of a stock picker's market, because it's easy to get complacent and you don't care about buying a stock that's going up. You care about buying a stock that's beating the major averages, that has a positive alpha, and the more impressive, the better it is. But to just say, oh, this isn't a stock picker's market, well, then I assume you have all your money in the SPY and the QQQ and you're just playing golf. Yeah. So now we really truly are in a bona fide stock picker's market, where you really have to understand. You have to understand charting, you have to understand position sizing, and you have to understand taking profits. Because if you don't understand those three things, you're not going to prevail in this market. You're going to get chopped up. That's the way the market is now. And it didn't used to be that way. It bailed you out of everything. Now there is no parole.
Right. Doesn't require, it requires the discipline that you didn't need just a short time ago. Well,
yeah.
This kind of brings up a good point
for you before doesn't now.
So this brings up a good point. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about what you're looking at when you're doing your stock picking to give you an edge.
Trading Apple, sometimes you get the bear. Sometimes it gets you. Single stock daily leverage and inverse ETFs from Direction. Before investing, carefully consider a fund's objectives, risk, charges, and expenses contained in the prospectus at direction.com. Read carefully.
Welcome back to the Investing with IBD podcast. It's Justin Nielsen, your host, and Arusha is on vacation, and he'll be joining us next week. But we do have Dan Fitzpatrick joining the podcast again. He is the founder of Stock Market Mentor, so it's good to have him back on the show. And in our first segment, Dan, we were talking about the market and kind of this top-down approach where you look at the market and then you kind of drill down a little bit. Can you talk a little bit more about that approach and how you might have shifted as you've learned new tricks in this market?
Sure. When I first started trading in 1996, and in 2000, I worked for John Bollinger for about 6 months. I basically talked my way into a job that I was totally unqualified for. It's a talent of mine that's got me fired from many different jobs throughout the years, but I've learned a lot. Anyway, so one of the things that I learned,
John Bollinger, of course, Bollinger bands for people that are familiar with that technical indicator. So,
that's another, that's another thing. I can't look at anything without Bollinger bands because they make so much sense to me. But one thing I learned from John was this top-down approach where you look at the broader market, like such as the S&P. And if the S&P is working, then you want to dig further and look for the sector that's working or the sectors that are working. And then once you find the sectors, then you go into the industry groups, you know, semiconductors versus technology, or then maybe fabricators, you know, within that, whatever's working. And then finally go into stocks, into the stocks that are working. So you're kind of really digging down to find the gold. And that worked well for me for a long time, because as I mentioned in the last market, there are times when it's really not a stock picker's market. You just kind of buy what's working and everything seems to be working. But as I've gotten a little more refined in my trading and in my market knowledge, I've realized that approach, at least the way I used it, maybe I was using it wrong. I would always find the stuff that was working really well that had been working really well. And I just kind of missed the move because I had to dig through all these different layers again to get to the gold. I'm not talking about gold stocks, though they seem to be hot lately. So instead, what I did was, as I learned more about technical analysis, I turned it around and I'm going like, you know what? I just want to find the stocks that are working, that are giving me these patterns, that are in new uptrends, that have this moving average matrix that I like so much. I want to find those, because if I find some of these stocks, or if I find one stock that's in a sector that's all beaten down and nobody likes it and all that, but this one stock in there turns out to be a really good one, well, that's the stock I want to be in, especially when it comes time for that whole sector to kind of catch fire and more people, more investors are flocking to this particular sector. So if you can get in the winning stock early, then by the time the old Dan comes down to it through the top-down approach, you're in a winner and you've got more profits, and then you can kind of trade in and out of that. You've got more options when you have a good profit in a stock. And so that's just kind of what I found was if I could develop certain parameters, irrespective of what the market was doing, then I could be in better stocks earlier. And then I also had, you have to develop, or you get out of the business, I had to develop ways to manage my risk, because you can be in, you know, you can think you're in the right place, but if you're losing money, then you can't keep trading, because now you've just gone from trading to gambling, and there is no gambling in trading.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess one of the things too that is a little bit tough when you're, as you said, if you're kind of looking at where the money has been going and then kind of following that, you know, you can be late. And if you're trending for long enough, being late is okay, but certainly what seems like we've been dealing with lately is things haven't been trending for very long. So if you wait until things are looking strong, then you know that's kind of at their top, and you're buying at the high and then selling at the low, and that's kind of the opposite of what you're supposed to do.
It is really hard right now because, just in a nutshell, breakouts aren't working. I mean, you always want to pay attention to the breakouts, but you know, I can tell more about what a market's doing by just seeing whether breakouts are working than I can by looking at the major averages at the NASDAQ or the S&P, because it does all get down to what stocks are doing. And it used to be where if I had, because I'm a fairly active trader, but if I had a 15% profit in a stock, you know, I'm really looking to take some profits in that, maybe close it all out, but really just try to take some profits, which drops my average cost basis and the rest of it, and then wait to see if a subsequent pullback hits a higher low, to where then I can reload and build a bigger position size, because the stock's reinforcing to me that it's where the money's going. So like 15%, 5% pullback, 7% pullback, hey man, I'm back in and ready to go. Well, if you look at stock, at generally speaking, if you look at most stocks, they tend to go up and down in about a 10% range. As you look at the sideways drifting ones, and there's a lot of them, X the very, very volatile ones, it's like 10%. And so with that said, if you're looking for a 15% gain, you know, it's not going to happen very often. So let's go with that. It's not going to happen very often. So now if I get a 7 or an 8% gain, now I'm looking for the ceiling, and now I'm kind of looking for the early exit. And so my profit expectation, just based on what the market's giving me, my profit expectation is lower. And that means that my loss tolerance also has to be lower. Right. I have to be buying it at the low. You know, you can't buy breakouts anymore. At some, I'd love it if you do, but I have to wait for the pullback so I could buy it close to the bottom of that 10% channel. Mm-hmm. And then I start looking for the exits earlier. As long as that's the kind of trading that's working, you're in a market that's not very good, because who wants to just be doing that? But that's really the kind of market that we're in right now. And so it really won't be, you know, I talk about being stock specific and what you're trading, obviously, but you got to look at, in the aggregate, just this theme of, are breakouts working? Are earnings, are great earnings gapping up and running, or are they gapping up and then being slammed down by investors who are saying, finally, I got my opportunity either to get my money back or to finally take profits. As long as we're seeing that kind of dynamic, you know, I think we're still in kind of a tough market.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, certainly the risk management part is very important. And I really like that concept. I mean, this is something that Bill O'Neill taught me. The whole idea, what he called it, was the 3-to-1 ratio. You know, if you're looking at getting profits at, you know, 15, well, then you got to make sure you're cutting those losses at 5. That way you can take a number of losses and have one gainer and make up for it, right? And that's just the way the math works, right?
Well, yeah, most traders, they don't understand mathematics because they don't want to know how bad they are. you know, it's really sad, you know, but it's really true, because trading's fun. And, you know, I'll just say this, if your dopamine is going off the charts and you're getting adrenaline rushes all the time, you're doing it wrong. It should actually, you know, kind of be a little bit boring and mechanical. And so, you know, what I always go back to this, are you making money? Mm-hmm. Are you making money? And if the answer is no, well, then the response has to be, okay, we got to do something different. Is it you or is it the market? And right. maybe it's the market, but if it's the market, it doesn't matter because you're not doing well. But what you're talking about with respect to the math, you know, there's really two components to that, and you got to get to both of them. And that is the win-loss ratio. Obviously, how many winning trades do you have versus how many losing trades do you have? But then we get to the other part of the math, which is what you're mentioning with Bill O'Neill. What's your average gain versus mm-hmm. what's your average loss? You can have a 500 batting average and blow out in no time flat if you don't have position size and risk management parameters with stops down. On the other hand, you know, you can have a 300 batting average and build a career on right. that if your losses are small and your gains are big. And you're also going to find out that, and you know, you have to accept that your big increases in your account are going to take place from very few trades. Mm-hmm. Most of your profitable trades are not going to really move the needle in the portfolio too much. Maybe a little bit, but not a lot. And then every once in a while, you get this one that really, really hits it out of the park. And that's the one that really jumps up your account. But you have to be there in order to get that one. And I'm not talking about really just, oh, this is the one, this is the one. I'm talking about, there's this principle called the Pareto principle, where mm-hmm. it's like, you know, it's just the same thing with employment, like 80% of your work comes from 20% of your employees. You know, we're mm-hmm. seeing that in some of the tech, like Twitter and Meta, and, you right, know, right. They're ditching mm-hmm. the 80%ers and keeping the 20s. But mm-hmm. you see the same thing in your trading. At least that's what I've seen, is my big gains are the ones that take the account higher. The rest, I'm just kind of treading water and hopefully keeping my nose up above it. But then you also have to look at the flip side of that. If you're going to blow up your account, you didn't blow up your account slowly. 20% of your losses are responsible for 80% of the, you know, of the drop in your account. So it's just really important to understand the math.
Yeah.
Once you understand the math, here's the way I look at it. Once you understand the math, then you have a true understanding of what your trading process and what your trading results are. Only then can you fix it. Because
yeah.
you can't improve something if you're not measuring it. How do you right. know whether mm-hmm. you're getting better or not if you don't have an objective measurement? That was such a big revelation to me on a lot more levels than just trading, but certainly to trading. You got to measure it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So let's get into this a little bit deeper. You know, you kind of explained the top-down approach and the bottom-up approach. So, When you're doing your stock picking, you know, what is it that you're looking for specifically in order to say, okay, this is a setup that's worth taking a shot on? And as you said, they don't all have to work. You know,
right.
it's just you have to be trying enough of them, you know, and the ones that don't work, you cut your losses. Mm-hmm. But trying enough of them, that's what's going to get you those few winners that will be moving the needle. So what is it specifically that you look for?
Well, the first thing I look for is to cut out most of the stocks. Because if I'm looking at the market in general, looking at all stocks, or, you know, see what's on CNBC or Bloomberg or Fox Business and, hey, what are they talking about? Mm-hmm. You know, it's not going to get me too far. If I'm doing TV, then sure, maybe I sound real smart if I talk about something that goes up, but that doesn't make anybody any money. So what I do is, right off the bat, and I learned this from Paul Tudor Jones, if a stock's below the 200-day moving average, it's literally dead to me. I mm-hmm. don't even want to look at it, because I might do something stupid like try to catch the bottom. Mm-hmm. And so if it's not above the 200, I don't care about it. And then that would be my initial filter. And then I'll just kind of dig down. My idea is to get it more and more narrow, which when you think about it, that's exactly what MarketSmith has on your different parameters, where
right.
you start on your scans, you start with the broader market and gradually, you know, you start from like 7,000 stocks and get down to 150 or mm-hmm. something by applying parameters. And so my basic ones, even to get to that point, are price above the 200 day moving average, also the 50 above the 200 day moving average. And I'll talk more about that in just a sec as far as the 50-day moving average. But on a fundamental, on a fundamental basis, I want to see the EPS be, say, above 85 or so. And then from
the EPS rating?
Pardon me?
The EPS rating. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then on the relative strength, I'm also looking for 85 on that. Mm-hmm. And so that gets me just those four parameters. They'll get me a group of stocks that I can get my arms around. Now, you're always going to miss something. And mm-hmm. frankly, you know, I'd say, yeah, like on that one, you go from 9,600 down to 194. But I will, I acknowledge that I'll miss the best ones. And that's just trading. You're always going to miss the best ones. You just want to get more good ones than bad ones. But this helps get me in the right direction, because with relative strength ratings that high, then you know institutions are buying it. Otherwise, the relative strength wouldn't be that great. Mm-hmm. And then with the EPS ratings, that's again, that's the stuff that institutions like. And so if I'm going to fish, you know, I want to fish where the fish are. And mm-hmm. institutions know where that is. So I want to fish with those guys and maybe just catch a little guppy and go along for the ride. But mm-hmm. I know that a lot of people require the price to be above the 50-day moving average. I don't really want to limit myself to that. And I'll tell you why. Because some of the things that we've been talking about just with this moving average matrix or hierarchy, what I've found is some of the best trades that unfold are ones where the 50 and the 200 are really pretty close together, and mm-hmm. they're kind of trading sideways. And mathematically, that means that the stock's been trading sideways for a while, or those moving averages wouldn't line up. And sometimes you'll get this volatility explosion from a stock that's actually been below the 50-day moving average for a while. Mm. And if I don't have that stock on my radar because it didn't hit it, because it wasn't above the 50, that's something that then when I see it, because maybe I'm scanning for volatility squeezes and, you know, a big move higher above the upper Bollinger Band, then I look at it and I go, well, crap, why didn't I see that before? Yeah, and it's because it was 2% below the 50-day moving average, so it didn't get on my screen.
You see it, but it's too late.
Yeah. So I just, that's something that I just dispense with, and I think there are other traders in my arena that don't. You know, they require the price to be above that. I just don't, and I think it's just because of the type of setup that I look at. So it's
well, and it gives you a little tolerance level.
It's just my way.
Yeah, it gives you a little tolerance level there too, you know, again, especially when something is going sideways, it's a little bit easier for it to be kind of trading maybe a little bit up and down around that 50-day moving average line. So you don't want it to kind of drop off your radar too quickly.
Well, and see, we're talking now in a situation like that, you also want to be looking at volume. You don't want to see high volume when a stock's trading sideways like that, because the whole idea is, it's a sleepy stock. There are, weak hands, so to speak, just people that aren't, you know, retail traders that aren't really committed to the stock. So they're liquidating a bit, but it's holding up at a certain level because there's somebody down there buying it. And so the supply and the demand are pretty evenly balanced without a lot of these gyrations. And in that case, then there's comes a certain point, you know, where the rubber meets the road. When the supply dries up, is there enough demand to push it up to another level? Or is there a, is it a situation where when the supply dries up, there's a little demand that squirts it up, but not enough to follow through? And that's why, and that's kind of what we're getting now. To go, you know, zoom out a little bit, that's why breakouts aren't working. There's not enough money saying, I got to get me that stock right now. Everybody's got these alligator arms, you know, they're not reaching out too far.
The T-Rex arms. Huh?
So, yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the stocks that are on your radar, and maybe you can get into some of these concepts a little bit more deeply.
Sure. Yeah, I look forward to it.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Trading Tesla? Sometimes you get the bear. Sometimes it gets you. Single stock daily leverage and inverse ETFs from Direction. Before investing, carefully consider a fund's objectives, risk, charges, and expenses contained in the prospectus at direction.com. Read carefully.
Okay, welcome back to the Investing with IBD podcast, everybody. It's Justin Nielsen, your host, and Arusha. He's going to be joining us next week. He's taking a break this week. But we do have Dan Fitzpatrick. He's the founder of Stock Market Mentor. This is a great site, and I wanted to kind of give people a little bit of a chance to, you know, as we kind of learn about some of the stocks that are on your radar, I wanted to mention where can people find more information about you, Dan? I know you have a Twitter. You're pretty active there at Dan Fitzpatrick. And then also your website, I assume.
I have Stock Market Mentor, which is really kind of the home base. I also have an option site, Option Market Mentor, very creative that way. And I run both of those sites. So I'm doing stocks and options in, you know, different ways, but we're doing really well over at Stock Market. I've been doing that since 2006.
Okay.
So it's really a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun for me.
Well, and I'm sure it is fun for your members as well.
We got people that have literally been with me since 2006. So, you know, they've either forgotten that they're paying or they really like me.
Okay.
So I'd love to have people give it a try.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, let's get to our first stock here that is on your radar right now. And this is one we've been talking about, Arista Networks. And so, certainly, I mean, the computer networking group, this is absolutely one of the leaders. So what is it about the stock chart here that is attracting you?
Okay. Yeah. Start with the weekly chart.
Okay.
And this was another one. I mean, I get a lot of my stock ideas from people in our trading room, and you know but the thing is, it's not like you look at somebody points out a stock and you say, oh yeah, that's right. They just point out a ticker, and then you're looking at it and you're going, okay, well, I think that guy's going to lose money the way he's trading it, but wow, I really see something here. And so I looked at this weekly chart. And I see that this thing has been at a top of $150 since December 2021. That's 15 months of a high basing pattern, which is kind of, you know, if you look at that and compare it to what this was doing prior to that, starting as I'm looking at your chart in, say, March of 2018. On until December of 2021, when it broke out. This is doing the same exact pattern, and this is on a weekly chart. And so I looked at that, and I see that if you just do a simple kind of a cocktail napkin down and dirty measured move, where you're measuring the depth of this cup from 150 down to the June low of, you know, around $90. That's $60. And so a real simple technical analysis measured move is, okay, if it's a $60 depth, then once it breaks out, we can expect it to run $60 on the upside. Just kind of very general rule of thumb thing. Well, that takes us up to above 200 bucks to about 210. And the way this is looking, I mean, that to me is my price target, at least 200. But then, so, you know, you see what I'm looking at from the, from this latest low in last June, and then a higher low in October, and then a higher low still in January of this year. This is really giving you kind of an inverse head and shoulder continuation pattern. You know, that would be a Frankenstein head and shoulder pattern. but it is giving some, you know, you can call it a cup, you could, whatever you want to call it. I just call it a really good looking pattern of higher lows and a flat top. And mm-hmm. when a stock like this on the weekly chart breaks through a flat top, Then here's what you have to look for. You say, okay, how far is it going to go before it pulls back? And then you say, okay, it's looks like it's going to pull back. How far is it going to pull back before it goes again? Okay, well, we see that playing out here. Now flip to the daily chart and you can see exactly what's happening. This thing popped out above 150. Well, it popped out above 150. Back in mid-March, and it ran right up to 170 by, you know, like 2 weeks later, a week later. That was the initial move, and it was on pretty good volume. I mean, the volume bars during that time, yeah, the blue ones there, these are skyscrapers, and that's what you want to see. And then since that time, when the stock peaked on the 23rd, it's been retracing, it's been pulling back. Okay, but here's the thing. First of all, the pullback has been on declining volume. I'll take that any day after the kind of move this has had. And how far has it pulled back? A little over 6%. Okay, well, after the kind of run that this has had, I'll take 6% too. And look at the volume bars, declining volume. And so this is on a daily chart. You know, it's, you know, on a daily chart, it still looks good. It's a little bit overbought for my tastes with respect to like a short term trade, 3 or 4 days. It just seems like it's got more needs to be consolidating a bit. But when you look at that weekly chart, in my mind, this is a stock that you want to buy and hold for a bigger move. But you can't buy it for a bigger move and then sell it 2 weeks from now because you got stopped out for a 3% loss. You have to decide, what am I trading here? Am I trading the fundamentals and a weekly chart, or am I just doing an impulse buy and then I'm not going to give it any room to move because I'm a swing trader at heart? I mean, you have to decide. And the way you can hold for a bigger move, by the way, is keep your position size small, so you're not risking many dollars. You can always add to it when it works. But if you look at the, you know, at the EPS rating on this, it's 98. You look at the relative strength rating, it's 96. The, you know, and I'm actually seeing, you know, one little bone I would have to pick with the RS rating is, back in on the last peak in RS a few weeks ago, I don't have my Market Smith up, but that last peak was higher than that was higher than it is right now. So and yet the price has hit a new high. So it's like the price has hit a new high, but the RS rating has not hit a new high. So you know, that's a little, I don't really like that too much. But then what you want to do is you just want to zoom in and see how it's behaving in more of a shorter term basis. I'm not going to let something like that keep me away from the stock. You know, I just think they've got really good fundamentals, a good fundamental story. And I think the institutional buying is, it looks pretty obvious. This is not profit taking. If the stock did not break out, or if it broke out and then immediately fell, then you would say, well, I think this move is over. It's a fake out. But I don't think so. I think this is more of a long-term hold.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, let's go ahead and shift gears over to another stock that begins with A, Analog Devices. You mentioned chips before, and mm-hmm. the chips are certainly in one of the strongest groups, right now. This is in the semiconductor manufacturing. So talk to us a little bit about ADI.
Yeah, I like this for a lot of the same reasons. If, you know, we're just talking about the relative strength on Aristanet here, you know, I have a problem with that on the weekly chart as well. It's 90, which is good. But it's not as high as it was. Yeah. Right where you're drawing there. So that's a little bit of a negative too. I like the Aristanet pattern better, but you see the same elements here. RS of 90 certainly gets it in the wheelhouse. And then you look at the EPS rating of 92, composite rating 98, timeliness. I mean, everything's kind of lining up. And if I was just looking at Bill O'Neill's parameters, I'm pretty sure it's 100%. And so at that point, now it just becomes, where's the trade? You know, I want to look for the trade on this stock. And this was actually one that, you know, every once in a while I'll help Jim Cramer with his off the charts segment. A lot of people don't know. I actually helped Jim during the first week. I was on vacation up skiing and he contacted me and he said, hey, I want to do this chart thing every day next week. Can you help me write the program? And I'm going like, sure, writing charts or doing skiing.
You know, on your vacation, right? Just what you wanted.
Yeah. So I've been helping him with that ever since. And this was the one that I mentioned to him. And I was really focusing more on the weekly chart on this one as well. But it's a little sloppier than Aristanet, but it does have the same kind of characteristics where I would look at that trough, say, if you go to the weekly chart, you'll see it from that top there to the bottom. It's about $50. And then you've got successively higher lows. And that's right where the breakout is, right around 190. So this is a stock, as we're doing this right now, it's not at a good setup. It really kind of needs to work to do some work more. It's holding at the 50, but out of the last 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, out of the last 7 trading days, only one of them has been an up day. So it's still, and that was on fairly low volume. So this is still a stock that's under distribution short term. And I just think it needs to build a base more, but it's definitely one to keep an eye on. I mean, just because you look at a stock and it doesn't quite have the setup that you're looking for, you can't take that off your list, or you're never going to have any stocks that you're looking for, because typically, you know, an entry point is going to be like 1 or 2 days, something like that. So you want to have that list and then be setting price alerts so that you're not always saying like, crap, you know, it's Wednesday, I should have seen this last Friday.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially in this market, this is not a market that's very forgiving if you're chasing stuff. You know,
no, it's not. If you're chasing, you're buying from somebody who wasn't.
Yeah, you know? Right, exactly. Let's go ahead and round this out with one of these kids is not like the others. Okay, so Marathon Digital.
This one looks quite different.
What is it that is attracting you about this one? Because again, it does look very different. I mean, just again, this blue line that we're looking at here, and for those of you that are listening, you can always look at some of the chart analysis that we're doing at investors.com/podcast. But you know, this blue line that we're talking about, this is the relative strength line. This is actually a comparison of the stock versus the S&P 500. It's actually a little bit different from the number here, because this number, the relative strength rating, does compare that stock versus all stocks in our database. So the relative strength line has been, you know, pretty brutal here, but the relative strength rating is a 93. So yeah, it's kind of interesting there. But well, EPS rating of 4. What's going on there?
Well, hey, man, it's kicking the crap out of a few stocks anyway.
Yeah, that's true. Uh-huh.
Yeah. No, it's from a fundamental standpoint, it's probably only slightly better than Enron was. it's just horrible. However,
well, at least you know they're not fudging their numbers, right? I mean,
who knows? Maybe they are. Maybe they are. But go to the daily chart on this, and I'll show you something. Now, look at the box in the upper left hand corner with the EPS history, and then forecasts. In 2022, hey man, they only lost basically $6 a share, which for a $10 stock now, that's kind of a big loss. Yeah. But they're projected to make 25 cents in 2023, which isn't a big deal. But then you look at 2024, they're projected to make 68 cents. That's 172% upside. So one could say that's a breakout. That'll be a breakout year. Okay, well, that's way in the future. I mean, hell, we're just trying to get through the next Fed meeting. But that is something, I would never trade just off of that, but it's something that just makes me go, And then I look at what they do. Okay, they mine cryptocurrencies with a focus on the blockchain ecosystem. And right now, for various reasons, and my compadre Scott McGregor knows more about crypto than I'll ever learn. He could address something like that. But for a lot of different reasons, crypto's really starting to take off. And so you got stocks like Marathon and also Riot and MicroStrategies, which we don't need to get into, but you're really seeing a good, there's Riot. That's another great one. Mm-hmm. You're really seeing these kind of crypto-oriented stocks, which have been absolutely crucified for so long, they're starting to catch bids. And if you think about what I was saying in the first segment, as far as investors kind of rotating out of the larger mega cap stocks, searching for something else. I'm not going to say all the money's going into Marathon Digital. I'm sure it's not, but something's happening here. But it's also, if you go back to the other things that I was saying, it's pretty much a rule breaker in every sense of the word. It was below the 200-day moving average all the way up until like Monday, 2 days ago.
Right. Yeah.
So the only reason I saw this stock again was because somebody called it to my attention, but it's breaking just about every rule that I talked about. However, I look at these squeezes, and this was a classic squeeze. And so fundamentally, it doesn't make sense. It is like you say, one of these is not like the other. This would be the one. But I really think this one has some legs, especially, we'll get into a little top down. Like if you go back to Riot, it's the same industry, really, blockchain. That's also taking off. And you can see it's been in a very, very long base. It's essentially shaking everybody out, everybody that rode this thing all the way down through 2022, they're either going to be buy and hold forever, or they've already rotated out of this stock. So now it's getting a new group of buyers. And I like to look back about 6 months or so and say, like, okay, what's the stock done over the last 6 months? And why am I doing that? Because I want to know whether people that are in this stock are winners or losers. And in this case, people that are in this stock, it's a total generalization, but guess what? That's what trading is you're generalizing about what the crowd is going to be doing. If you look at Riot, everybody that's bought in the last 6 months, man, they're winners. So now the question is, are they going to sell because they're losing money? Well, obviously no. Are they going to be taking profits? Sure, maybe, but look at the chart. There's going to be people that are going to be happy to get them out of that trade because they're buying. And then you look at the same thing with MicroStrategy. And I remember back when in 2020, when Bitcoin was going through the roof, you know, MicroStrategy, I forget the CEO's name, he's just all into Bitcoin. Right. And the stock is just screaming. But then when Bitcoin fell, you know, MicroStrategy kind of became micro stock. But now it's moving up, I think, in, you know, it to some extent in sympathy with Bitcoin. It's not, you know, it's different than the others as far as exactly what they do, but they have a big Bitcoin holding. And so this is kind of more of a thematic thing, but you know, so I like Marathon. I own that. I like Riot, and I don't think, you know, full disclosure. I have a little bit of Riot as well. So I like both of those, but as far as entries, I like Marathon better right now.
Okay. Well, great. As you mentioned with MicroStrategy, I know that they did, change CEOs. Saylor was the one that was
right.
Very, very into the Bitcoin. And, you know, he was basically saying, well, why hold cash? Why not just put it in Bitcoin and, you know, have it do something?
He found out why to hold cash.
Right, exactly. So, very good. Well, hey, Dan, it was a real pleasure having you on the show. Really appreciative of you sharing your insights, sharing some of your stock ideas, and the way you're looking at things. So thanks a lot for coming on.
Well, thanks for having me, Justin. Really appreciate it. It's always fun.
Always a pleasure. And again, you know, you can follow Dan at Twitter at his handle at Dan Fitzpatrick. You can also find him at Stock Market Mentor, where he has a paid service where he's giving a lot of information to his members. So thanks again for joining us.
Well, thanks, Justin.
Okay. And when we come back on next week, we're going to have Arusha back, and we're also going to have Matt Caruso back from Caruso Insights. So he's another one of our go-to guys for podcasts and IBD Live. So hope you join us for that. Thanks a lot for watching this week, and we'll see you next time.
Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast if you haven't already. We'd really appreciate it. You can also send us your questions and comments to investingpodcast@investors.com. We would love to hear from you and may use your comments on an upcoming episode. This podcast is for informational and educational purposes only, and nothing should be construed as a recommendation to buy, hold, or sell any securities. Make sure to consider consulting with your financial advisor before making any investment decisions.